From Erie to Jeffersonville, Tyrone to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a new study from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University finds Pennsylvania has one of the highest regulatory burdens in the nation. David Taylor and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capital Watch look at the impact. And after being passed over as Kamala Harris's vice presidential running mate, Governor Josh Shapiro's aura of invincibility in the 2026 gubernatorial race has been shattered. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. This weekend, Pennsylvania is once again the epicenter of presidential politics. Donald Trump has a rally in Luzerne County in northeastern Pennsylvania, while his running mate, J.D. Vance, will be across the state in Westmoreland County meeting with veterans. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz launch a bus tour in Pittsburgh on Sunday. The focus will then move to Chicago, where the Democrat National Convention is set to get underway on Monday. A Democrat-affiliated group has filed a legal challenge seeking to keep Robert F. Kennedy Jr. from appearing on the Pennsylvania presidential election ballot. The group alleges the nomination papers filed by Kennedy included numerous ineligible signatures and other defects. An attorney for Kennedy said the challenge is unfounded. Kennedy filed more than three times the number of signatures required for an independent candidate to appear on the ballot. Commonwealth Court will now decide the matter. While the focus is on the presidential campaign, a heated battle for control of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives is taking place at the grassroots level. Democrats currently have a one-seat majority in the state house. They view enthusiasm for the top of their ticket as an advantage in maintaining that majority. Republicans, meanwhile, point out the GOP has gained state house seats every time Donald Trump has been on the ballot. All 203 House seats are up for election this year, as are 25 of 50 seats in the state Senate, currently controlled by Republicans. In a surprise move, longtime State Representative Michael Sterla, a Democrat from Lancaster County, has announced he is dropping his reelection bid. Sterla has served in the lower chamber since 1991. The district is safe for Democrats, who must now select a new nominee to place on the November ballot. The Freedom Foundation has filed a 44-page complaint with the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General alleging the Pennsylvania State Education Association, or PSEA, funneled nearly $1.5 million in membership dues into Governor Josh Shapiro's 2022 campaign. It is illegal for labor unions to use membership dues to fund political contributions. According to the Center Square, the complaint says the PSEA funneled membership dues through the Democratic Governors Association, thereby violating both state and federal law. The PSEA has denied the allegation. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. A new study from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University finds Pennsylvania has the 14th highest regulatory burden among the 50 states. That makes it more difficult for businesses to operate in the Keystone State. To learn more, we turn to our Capital Watch crew, David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to see you, David. Glad to be here.
So we're going to kick it around. It's been, another time here in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA, trying to stay on top of all of the happenings, and it's been, I guess, relatively quiet since the legislature has been away.
Yeah, certainly this is that time of the year where legislators are typically not in session, and this year they aren't. Last year there was still an ongoing impasse at this time, but that did not happen this cycle. And so most of the lawmakers are either quietly at home in their districts or perhaps on vacation themselves.
And of course, you know, that Governor Shapiro continues to recover from the sting of not having been chosen as the vice presidential candidate of his party. So we'll see what that does for his enthusiasm on the day-to-day business of actually governing here in Pennsylvania. But the, you know, again, our focus as ever is how do we make Pennsylvania a better place to work and live? How do we, improve the underlying economic conditions to allow for more opportunity and prosperity? And how do we, you know, make state government work better to allow people to, you know, to improve themselves and their place in life? And, one of the recurring themes is the issue of regulation. Nobody's saying that there shouldn't be rules. We're just saying that the rules should make sense, that they should be, you know, subjected to some kind of independent cost-benefit analysis to make sure that they're, you know, that they're worth the doing, and that there's some kind of systematic review where we go back and look and make sure that the things that may have necessitated those rules before still make them necessary, because if not, those are things maybe we could stop.
Right. When you look at those antiquated rules and regulations that are never taken off the books, they're strangling the flow of our economy in Pennsylvania, making it harder for every entrepreneur to do their work, for every taxpayer to pay their bills, because we have these antiquated regulations and there is no system for repealing them swiftly and appropriately when they're no longer needed.
Right.
And they're just left to stand in the way.
And if government says, you know, scratch your right ear with your left elbow, like, if you're an employer, that's what you got to do because
you
that's
do
what
it.
Government says, even if it makes no sense.
Yeah, so that is a struggle. And if you look at, there's been a lot of groups that have studied Pennsylvania as compared to other states.
Yeah.
But one just came out recently with their evaluation, and this is from the Mercatus Center in Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
And they've looked at all the states and just come out this week with their determination that Pennsylvania is number 14 in terms of the regulatory burden that we have imposed.
Like how heavy
is the burden?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, number 14, this is the type of thing where you don't want to be number one. State number 50 is the best. State number one has the most oppressive regulations. And we're number 14.
Yeah.
And we've seen the evidence. We've slipped in population and job growth, and we've just got a government that's full of red tape and challenges and difficulties. So number 14, it could be worse.
Yep.
And some of our close neighbors are actually some of the worst ones, New York State in particular, New Jersey in particular.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that being said, those are not our competition. Our
Correct.
Competition is going the other direction, westward. Ohio, for example, mm-hmm. in the energy industry, they've been running circles around us.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia, same
mm-hmm.
thing. We're seeing school choice. We're seeing the growing impact of America's energy industry, largely centered around Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. And the opportunities we have are just being unnecessarily slowed down by the overly regulatory system we have here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and we should want the investment. We should want the business activity because that's what creates wealth, creates opportunity, creates jobs that are family sustaining with good wages and benefits. Like we should want more of that. And, it comes down to there's a continuing competition between the states for investment and jobs and economic growth. And that, if Harrisburg isn't attuned to the competitiveness differential, like how hard or, how easy is it to do that work here in Pennsylvania rather than our competitor states, the world is not standing still.
And one of the scholars that was involved in this study that I've been citing here was Patrick McLaughlin. And one of the comments he made I thought was interesting. He says that states that manage to change that process by reevaluating old stuff, they're the ones that can change the way regulations tend to actually accumulate. Leaving regulations on their own, not worrying about red tape, is going to imply slower economic growth, more poverty, and lost jobs.
All of our architects and engineers, they hold licenses that are issued by the Commonwealth. And of course, they have to meet state standards to be able to, to earn those credentials to use them in their profession. Well, if they're licensed credential holders from the Commonwealth, why don't we treat them as officers of the Commonwealth? Like, why don't we just say that the work this person has done, because they are credentialed by the Commonwealth, we consider it valid? Because these professional people are putting their reputations on the line, and if they mess up, they would lose their credential, which means they'd no longer be able to work. Like, they're the ones who have the motivation to get it right.
And over the years, I've had the opportunity to speak with individuals who are involved in the energy industry and talk to them about the burdens they face in Pennsylvania that they don't face in some other states.
Mm-hmm.
I was informed by them about, for example, in the state of Texas and some other of the Southwest states where there is energy production, that the concept you were discussing there about licensed professionals, if you file a plan in those other states that is signed off on by registered professional engineers, it's been reviewed by all the appropriate individuals who are not part of the government, but
right.
they are
in
licensed.
Your company, yeah, or vendors to your company, yes.
And certified by the government to do that work, it is presumed that your plan is accurate unless they find problems with it. In Pennsylvania, it's almost the opposite.
Right.
No matter who signs it, how expert they are known to be by their industry standards, Pennsylvania will still start from scratch and essentially re-engineer it the way it wants.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the law requires it, because they just prefer it to do it a different way
yeah.
that slows things down. So the unnecessary amount of delay and difficulty we impose simply by not taking seriously those industry professionals who are properly certified and commissioned to be professional engineers and have that expertise to evaluate plans, they're simply being slapped in the face here in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And saying, well, it doesn't matter what you did. We're going to do it our way, and you're going to have to come invest additional time, money, and resources in doing it our way.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation. And, you know, that point, I think, is exceptionally well made. And, again, to get back to the quote from the Mercatus expert about systematic review – to me, that's just so blindingly obvious, you know, that if you're going to, you know, it's like if you're going to paint a door, do you, you know, just keep putting coat after coat after coat? It's like, no, you're going to have to strip the paint, sand it, and then repaint it. But nobody ever goes back to take off the old coats of paint that we just keep piling on additional stuff. And I don't know. The concept, our good friend, State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill of York, has a concept, the Office of the Repealer, to have an entity that would conduct that kind of systematic review of all the things that are on the books. Again, to do that evaluation, you know, why did we need it in the first place? You know, was it effective? Was it not effective? Was it partially effective, partially not affected, but had other side effects that were unanticipated? Did it correct the problem? Do we still need that particular, you know, form or whatever today?
The ideas are there. They're in Harrisburg. They're already put in the form of bills. It's mm-hmm. just a matter of will the leadership and will Governor Shapiro in particular have the courage to take the bully pulpit and say these things need to not just to be sitting in a dusty bin somewhere in the Capitol, but actually let's bring them out, let's debate them, let's vote them. And we can totally change the whole nature of Pennsylvania's economic climate if we could just, again, start to move away from the top tier, the top 15 of most overly regulated states, and move ourselves down midway or closer to the bottom, where we need to be, where we can actually compete with our neighbors.
And again, just one more point, and then I'll let it go. But talking about the recognizing the credentials of you know, certified, licensed Pennsylvania experts, whether it's, you know, whether an engineering degree or architecture, whatever, that in a lot of instances that Pennsylvania's process of assuming everything is wrong until it's proven to be correct,
exactly.
that the Commonwealth doesn't have reviewers who are sufficiently expert to be able to bring the knowledge that the engineers put into the creation of the application. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be another way to get around that problem. Instead of having to bring to bear a comparable level of expertise on staff if the Commonwealth would simply recognize the expertise that's inherent in these Commonwealth license holders. And it gets beyond just the the dollars and cents of lost investments and lost jobs for working people. It really goes to the American economy as a whole and American industry as a whole. And so when you see that the U.S. is woefully behind in, for example, shipbuilding, and that you have the dictatorship in Beijing cranking out new ships by the dozens a day, by the hundreds per week, and that the U.S. Civilian fleet, the maritime force, not nearly, it's just a fraction of what our adversaries have. And ultimately our freedoms depend on our ability to defend them, and so by crippling domestic industry with these unnecessary and often contradictory burdens, we're actually setting America up for great danger and potential failure in global conflict.
When we talk about public policy, it's not sort of a ivory tower thing that we like to talk about and it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
This has a tremendous impact in the real world, and our adversaries around the world
mm-hmm.
have put themselves already in a position where they can outcompete us. We're tying our own ankles with these extra regulations we don't need to have and these slow-moving bureaucratic processes, while other countries around the world are producing things and quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It has a real-world consequence that we are falling behind.
And it's one of the points I always make about public policy in Harrisburg regarding energy production. America needs Pennsylvania's energy contribution. Like Pennsylvania's contribution to the U.S. energy portfolio is very significant. And that bad policy, bad decisions in Harrisburg, if it diminishes Pennsylvania energy production, it weakens America. And so there are consequences well beyond, just the 67 counties when we don't get things right, or when things are on the wrong track and we just kind of leave them that way. Well, and of course, along with policy, you get politics. And man, in 2024, Pennsylvanians are going to get an absolute snootful of politicking because we're the pivotal swing state in the America's Electoral College setup, that we have a critical U.S. Senate race when the balance of power in the U.S. Senate comes down to one seat. We've got a number of really competitive U.S. House races. And so we are going to get it wall to wall between now and election day, probably every hour of every minute of every hour of every day.
We are at the center of the storm. We are ground zero in this presidential election cycle. And if you look at the spending that's going on already, we're in August only.
Yes, yes.
The spending that's going on already, it's setting all kinds of records. And Pennsylvania is out by far in front of all the other swing states in terms of the amount of spending that's happening here. I got some stats that just came out today on reserved advertising. In other words, advertising that the campaigns have already committed to purchasing over the coming months.
Booked it.
Pennsylvania on the Republican side, 71.5 million. On the Democratic side, 43.9 million. That is about double what's being spent in the next big swing state, Georgia. It's about double or a little more than what's being spent in the swing state of Michigan. It's about three to four times what's being spent in Arizona. Clearly, at least four times more than being spent in Wisconsin. About five times more than North Carolina, and about 10 times more than in Nevada. So when you hear swing states, people think, there's a bunch of these swing states. It's Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It is Pennsylvania that is the decisive factor in this race, and that's why we're seeing not only the vice presidential candidates, but the presidential candidates themselves constantly coming to our state regularly. All four are in the state. And this is the beginning. You touch any electronic device, a television, a screen, you're at the ballpark, you're at a picnic. wherever you are, you are going to be inundated with all the paraphernalia and persuasion that this type of money draws into our state.
And so I beg the listeners, please hang on to your critical faculties. Do the best that you can to look at these things objectively. I can't believe that we would choose our next president based on vibe, but there are some people who aspire to that. Always remember that our republic, the success of our representative form of self-government depends on people exercising critical judgment, thinking for themselves and not being unduly persuaded by whether it's appeals to emotion or just razzle-dazzle. Let's please think things through to the extent that the candidates give us anything to actually get a hold of to think about.
And it's important also to think about the fact that these are not just federal elections. We have these important statewide elections, including the elections for control of the General Assembly, both the Pennsylvania House and the Pennsylvania Senate, which in the work we do in Pennsylvania at the Commonwealth Foundation, that's the bread and butter of where we work. We exercise our desire to try to educate lawmakers and make sure they understand public policy. And that's where the real organic changes begin, right here in our state legislature. So among all the billions of dollars being spent, consider the fact that we've got important statewide campaigns as well as those big expensive federal campaigns.
Yeah, we've got the Pennsylvania row officers of Attorney General, State Treasurer, and Auditor General. And, you know, and getting back to the things that we were saying about that competitiveness differential, how do we improve Pennsylvania and our standing relative to our competitor states? Those are factors that can only be addressed in Harrisburg by our state lawmakers. So if we want to improve that situation, we need to have good people sent from their communities to come to Harrisburg and try to puzzle these things through. Well, we're getting down here to the end of our time. Steve, it's always a joy to converse with you. Thanks for being here. Where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the stuff that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and me, thanks to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. At the beginning of the selection process to join Kamala Harris on the 2024 presidential ticket, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro was viewed as the front runner. Being a popular governor of a must-win battleground state, Shapiro was the obvious choice. And then the wheels fell off the bandwagon. The rest of the country learned what those of us in Penns Woods already knew. Josh Shapiro's image far outpaced his actual performance. His tightrope act on key issues resulted in drawing fire from both sides of the ideological divide. While attacks from conservatives were expected, it was the left that doomed Shapiro's chances of joining the Harris ticket. In particular, the Biden-Harris administration is already struggling with its handling of the Israel-Hamas war. The horrific terrorist attack Hamas unleashed on October 7th of last year and Israel's subsequent campaign to stomp out Hamas ignited a firestorm of protests in this country. The issue already put Shapiro, who is Jewish and who has admirably been a staunch defender of Israel, on tenterhooks. A commentary he wrote decades ago while a college student labeling Palestinians as incapable of living in peace resurfaced, further inflaming the pro-Palestinian left. That issue alone doomed Shapiro's candidacy, but there were and are other problems. He has rhetorically supported education freedom and school choice, while at the same time vetoing legislation designed to provide minority children in underperforming school districts with new education options. Saying one thing and doing another typically does not work well, and in this case, his words rattled the Democratic Party's labor union base while simultaneously earning the ire of education freedom advocates. In an era where the hashtag MeToo movement continues to play an outsized role, his failure to adequately address a sexual harassment scandal involving one of his cabinet secretaries drew opposition from feminist groups. To this day, Shapiro has been less than transparent over what occurred and made matters worse by insulting the female president pro tempore of the Pennsylvania Senate. The cherry on the sundae came when news broke that U.S. Senator John Fetterman had warned Harris against picking Shapiro because of his overt ambition and reputation for throwing even allies under the bus if it suits his political goals. Aside from selecting a running mate who is capable of assuming the presidency on a moment's notice, the first and foremost qualification of a vice presidential candidate is to do no harm. It became clear that while Shapiro may have given a boost to Harris's chances of winning battleground Pennsylvania, he would have enraged key Democratic constituencies. And while Minnesota likely would have ended up in the Democrat column anyway, Governor Tim Walz is a plain vanilla, although flawed, candidate who brings little or no baggage to the ticket. Voters rarely make their decision based on who is running for vice president, so the harm Shapiro would have done greatly outweighed whatever electoral advantage he would have brought to the ticket in Pennsylvania. Shapiro's dalliance with the vice presidency will have a lasting impact on Pennsylvania politics. Prior to the past few weeks, he was viewed as the prohibitive favorite to win re-election in 2026. State government receives precious little coverage outside of the Capital Region, so his PR machine has been able to carefully manage perceptions. But the vice presidential vetting process uncovered significant problems for Shapiro among his base constituencies. If nothing else, the vice presidential exercise has greatly increased the value of the 2026 Republican gubernatorial nomination. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBXQ-FM and WRTA-AM in Altoona, along with WFIL-AM in southeastern Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.